Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We'll be in-depth on the testimony on Thursday by fired FBI Director James Comey, and we'll talk about all the things you should understand about these Russia investigations. But we begin with the view of the political junkie about the week ahead in Washington. Ken, welcome back. Good to talk to you again.
Good morning.
Ken, President Trump is tweeting about the London terror attack over the weekend, and he's specifically tweeting critical things about the mayor of London. This has created a lot of conversation and controversy on this side of the ocean. Why? I mean, is it, you know, you just don't do this in a geopolitical sense, in an etiquette sense? Why?
I mean, I could give you a list of reasons that would go on throughout the whole program. And one, of course, basically, you're attacking the mayor of a city that just underwent a horrific terrorist attack. And basically, you're taking what the mayor, who just happens to be a Muslim, and I say that with quotes around it, took what he said out of context, basically. I mean, he's just said that you have nothing to, there's no reason to be alarmed. Trump tweeted that, you know, you have seven dead, you have multiple injuries, many injuries, and here you have the mayor of London saying there's no reason to be alarmed, when, of course, what the mayor of London said was there is going to be an increased police presence in the city, but there's no reason to be alarmed. And yet the president decided just to take that alarmed sentence out of context and use it as an attack on him because they have bad blood going back to last year's campaign.
So the president is also apparently tweeting that the London mayor has come up with a pathetic excuse for apparently why these terror attacks are continuing. There's been a lot of praise for the way the London police responded. They got to the scene and killed the attackers, I think, within 8 or 9 minutes, didn't they?
That's correct. All three were killed. And just the thought of, I mean, ostensibly, as far as I know, Great Britain is a close, key, pivotal U.S. ally. The fact that you have a city that underwent again another horrible terrorist attack, and to just single him out by name as the mayor who's doing a disastrous job, a poor job, is just, yes, it's vintage Trump, and we could roll our eyes saying it's vintage Trump. But this is a serious thing because, as we know, as we saw during the NATO summit, as we saw during the G7 meeting and all those things, he will attack Germany, he will attack allies, and of course, he will not attack Putin of Russia. And it's just a pattern of his, and people say, well, he calls them as he sees them, but I think he's seizing them wrong.
You know, while we're talking about international reaction, let's bring up his decision announced in the Rose Garden on Friday about withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord. You know, France and Germany immediately said this is not going to affect what we do. China stepped in to say we're not going to change the way we're approaching greenhouse gas emissions. Do you think the political result of this, the international political result of this, is that this is another way for Europe to draw tighter, Asia to have, particularly China, to have more influence, and in some ways to isolate the United States?
Well, I don't think that's what Trump wanted to do, but I think that's exactly what you just said, Carrie, is exactly what is happening. The influence of China, I don't know how much more they can do to reduce carbon emissions and things like that. But of course, China and the United States are two of the biggest aggrievers, you know, of this policy in the world. But it gives China a bigger leadership role. It takes America off the front stage, which I don't know why. You know, I mean, as far as leadership, when the Paris Treaty was signed, and not even a treaty, but the Paris Agreement was signed in, I guess, December of 2015. It was the U.S. who led the way. It was President Obama who led the way, and all these deadlines, you know, for the warming of the planet, which was so crucial, the fact that 195 nations signed on to it. And here you have the president saying, well, I'd rather stand with the city of Pittsburgh than with Paris. Now, I understand the alliteration of that. But of course, the city of Pittsburgh voted 75% for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And the people in Pittsburgh are as outraged as anybody else in the country. But he's also playing to the base, as we hear over and over again, that he thinks, or maybe he just wants to let people think that he's going to bring all these coal jobs back, but he's not going to. That is not the future. He's not going to bring these coal jobs back. And when you think of what happened to Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh was one of the most environmentally unsafe, unsound cities for years.
Yeah, I have family
with the
there.
Steel industry.
Right.
It was just awful. And the fact they've become so much more environmentally conscious, moving away from the steel industry to more green industry, the city is like night and day, and it's a success story. And it sounds like Donald Trump wants to bring us back to the good old days of those heavy pollution cities.
Ken Rudin is with us. If you've just tuned in, the political junkie. We're talking to him about President Trump's decision on climate change, what happened over the weekend in London, and the president's reaction to that. I want to get his view on James Comey's upcoming testimony. If you have questions about politics, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Ken, before we leave climate change, I'm curious about your view of the domestic political toll that the GOP and the president himself might take on this. And I ask that well aware that in polling, Americans say that by, I think, a small majority that they wanted the U.S. to stay in the Paris Accord, but that it doesn't really seem to be one of those top issues that Americans think about and vote on.
Well, I think that is true. I think when you're thinking of, when you talk about health care and things like that, I mean, those are the issues that are on everybody's minds, and you may not think of the environment. But I found in the past couple of years, this is just anecdotal a story, but I just found more and more people saying how concerned they are about what's happening with the flooding and the water shortages and the extreme variations of temperature. And it's just real. And people say that, no, it's not going to happen tomorrow, and it may not happen in the next 10 years, but it will affect our children and our grandchildren. And I find more and more people, and this is not a political issue, Republicans as well as Democrats saying, this is real, this is genuine, and it already may be too late. And the fact that Trump has said, well, we'll pull out and maybe we'll renegotiate, even though other countries say, no, we're not renegotiating, it pushes off the saving of the planet, and that sounds dramatic, but it pushes it off even further.
Well, I was reading David Harmani in The Federalist on why he doesn't think the Democrats are going to gain any elective edge on climate change. I think this
Carrie,
is...
Carrie, how often do you read The Federalist? What's going on with you?
And I think he's got a point here, Ken. So listen to this. He says, many voters don't see Democrats acting like people who believe we're facing an extinction-level event. For instance, why aren't we talking about adding hundreds of new nuclear power plants to our energy portfolio? Such an effort would do far more to mitigate carbon emissions than any unreliable solar or windmill boondoggle, his words, certainly more than any non-binding international agreement. Maybe there are trade-offs. Who knows? You know, in the end, I think there's a lot of Democratic voters who like the idea of this, but if it starts to hit their pocketbook, they might not be so thrilled about it.
You know, something, you make a very, very good point. And the thought, and the actual truth is, for all the lofty rhetoric coming from the Obama administration, and not even for 8 years, for only for the last second term, because he didn't run on this in 2008. But the Obama administration, I mean, look, we should have gotten rid of gas guzzling cars. We should have done that immediately. We should have more wind and solar panels, and we don't have that either. It was always a gradual thing, and it was never on the top of anybody's list. And as you say, if it started to affect the pocketbook, like, you know, gas, you know, cars would be much more expensive and everything else would be much more of an inconvenience. You wonder if the American people would have gone along with something that people would not see the results in for years.
Here's your mystery newsmaker of the week. Listen.
Oh, I hate this part.
You do not.
I indicated that in fact, global warming is occurring, that human activity contributes to it in some manner. Measuring with precision, from my perspective, the degree of human contribution is very challenging, but it still begs the question, what do we do about it? Does it pose an existential threat, as some say? You know, people have called me a climate skeptic or a climate denier. I don't even know what it means to deny the climate. I would say that there are climate exaggerators.
Now, that's important because of the position that that person has. Do you recognize the voice, Ken?
He sounds very much like Scott Pruitt, the Environmental Protection Agency head, who, of course, you know, it's interesting with the, you know, there were times when the longest time that President Trump would say that climate change is a hoax, it's fake, it's just blown out of proportion. And now when he was asked whether the president still believes in it, he said, that's not the point. The point is whether this is a good deal for the United States. And he says that economically it's not. But you do have the head of the EPA, who was the attorney general of the state of Oklahoma, who sued the EPA over and over again as he was in Oklahoma. And you just have a seemingly anti-environmental cabinet at a time when the rest of the world is saying something has got to be done.
Sandy asks on Twitter here, Ken, please speak to the president's unfilled positions and ethics wealth issues of nominees. Are any being held up by Democrats? And of course, the president is tweeting today that Democrats are taking forever to approve my people, including ambassadors. They are nothing but obstructionists, want approvals. And then I see reporters tweeting here, Trump has yet to nominate someone for 442 positions, 39 nominations confirmed, 63 total nominated. So the White House is falling far behind on these nominations.
Yeah, look, the Democrats can't hold up nominations that haven't happened yet. And as a matter of fact, we were talking about the acting ambassador to London, because there is no ambassador to London. You see that Kellyanne Conway's husband, who is up for a job basically defending the president against lawsuits, which is the thought of that is just beyond, he pulled himself out. There are a lot of conflicts of interest that even if the White House doesn't recognize it, the nominees themselves do, like the subsequent secretaries of the army designates who dropped out because they just couldn't deal with the paperwork and the business conflict. So you could blame the Democrats, you could blame the media, you could blame all you want, but the fact is that compared to previous administrations, there are far fewer nominees being made and far fewer vetting of potential nominees being done as well. It's just remarkable.
Ken, what are you going to be listening for on Thursday? We're going to be talking with Molly McHugh here in just a minute about James Comey's testimony. But as you listen for it, what are you watching for?
Well, you know something, you know it's going to be dramatic. You know, everybody in the world is going to be listening to it. We've heard two different things. We've heard, you know, several things that Comey has said that the president has suggested. One, that lay off the investigation of Michael Flynn, or you, James Comey, I want you to pledge your loyalty to me. And you know, I mean, there are so many things that Trump said that Comey has said, and Comey, for all his mistakes, and I think he's made a lot of mistakes, and the 2016 election cycle is a perfect example of it, he still seems like, for better or worse, a straight shooter. And I expect that he is going to say what the truth is. And of course, you're going to see a furious comeback and a furious resulting counterattack by the administration. But I mean, you know, there are a lot of Democrats who have been calling for his resignation and firing from the beginning as well. But I think it's the kind of thing that when Comey says that the president is not telling the truth, the president did not say what he said, I think it will carry a tremendous amount of weight. And you know that Bob Mueller is listening very carefully.
I was going to say, and split screen Thursday, right, to the Twitter feed from the president and the congressional committee hearing. Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah. He's even talking about going to London as a sign of empathy and, you know, trying to see some kind of distraction during the testimony. It'll be interesting if the president tries something at that very moment.
Ken, good to chat, and I'll talk to you next Monday.
Okay, and make sure you keep reading that Federalist magazine you keep reading. I don't understand why.
Will do. I'll share all the wit and wisdom that's coming from the Federalist with you, Ken.
Please mail it to me. Thank you.
Looking for a new podcast? I'm Tracy Mumford, a producer for NPR News. I'm part of the team working on 74 Seconds. It's a new podcast that looks at the shooting death of Philando Castile by Officer Geronimo Yanez. It happened last summer in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. Yanez is now facing charges in Castile's death. 74 Seconds looks at what happened that night and what happens now when a police officer goes on trial. Reporters John Collins and Reham Fashir will walk you through this case as it unfolds. It's a story about race, policing, and justice in America. Subscribe to 74 Seconds wherever you get your podcasts.